This is the Talking Tigers podcast, presented by Wickles Pickles. Look for Wickles Pickles at a grocery store near you and bring those tangy and fresh pickles to your home. Now, here's Andy Burcham with another Talking Tigers podcast.
He has been in the business for over 50 years. Philip Marshall followed in his father's footsteps almost accidentally. Benny Marshall was a giant as a sports writer. Philip intended to be a lawyer, but that never came to fruition. He grew up around Auburn and Alabama football. He knew Shug Jordan and Bear Bryant as a child. Philip's career has taken him from Birmingham to Huntsville and Montgomery and back, and now Auburn. Now he works as senior editor for Auburn Undercover and Inside the Auburn Tigers. The career of Philip Marshall is featured in this Talking Tigers podcast presented by Wickles Pickles. Welcome to this edition of the Talking Tigers podcast presented by Wickles Pickles. Very glad to have with us someone that I'm sure that you're familiar with, certainly familiar with his writing, many years as a beat writer, not only at Auburn, but Alabama, and a second generation sports writer in the state of Alabama. Philip Marshall now joins us. And Philip, I can't imagine the changes that you have seen in the business, Philip, to this point during COVID, where you're working from the house as much as you are at this point.
October the 5th was 51 years since the first day I walked into the Huntsville News, which no longer exists, for my first job as a sports writer. So, yeah, you might say the business has changed just a bit in that time. I've gone from manual typewriters. It was a big deal when we got electric typewriter, and then computers, and now doing everything online. I mean, I could not have imagined anything remotely like this way back when.
Yeah, Philip, when was it that you decided that this was going to be your career?
Well, that's an interesting story, Andy, because growing up, never. I had no intention of doing this. I was going to be a lawyer, which probably would have been a disaster, but it's a long story and it's an unusual one. I grew up obviously around Auburn, around Alabama. As a kid, for whatever reason, I was just always an Auburn fan. I mean, my daddy covered them both, and I knew people at both. I knew Coach Jordan and I knew Coach Bryant, all those kinds of things. Then when it came time to go to college, I was offered basically I hate to call it a scholarship because that indicates scholar, which I was most certainly, certainly not. But I was offered to get my way paid to school at Alabama and work in the media relations department. So I did that for a year. Really was a pretty good example of somebody that would have been a lot better off to wait a while to go to school, because I was not really very well prepared to or mature enough to do the simple things I needed to do. And so I didn't do very well, and I was absolutely certain I was going to get drafted. And with the Vietnam War, then this was 1969, the Vietnam War was raging. I had worked as what they then called a copy boy at the Birmingham News, which is just a glorified errand boy. And I'm not even sure it's a glorified errand boy. It was just an errand boy. But I did write a few things, and I covered some high school football games. That was the extent of my career. And full intention was to go back, wait and see what happened with the draft. If that didn't happen, to go back to school. That was my 100% my intention. With the help of my daddy, I got a job at the Huntsville News as a sports writer, which I honestly thought was going to be a temporary kind of deal. Hmm. But I didn't get drafted. They had the draft lottery, plus I had asthma, and so I didn't get drafted. 3 or 4 days before I was supposed to go to work at the Huntsville News, my daddy died. And so I was kind of in a difficult situation. And of course, it was just difficult in general, but I went a week late to work at the Huntsville News, still intending to go back to school, but money became an issue, and I liked what I was doing. And so I just kept at it. Really, I think about 6 months after I started, 8 months maybe, Bill Lumpkin offered me a job at the Birmingham Post-Herald. covering high schools. That's really kind of where it all started. And it just went from there. And I went back to the Huntsville News as the sports editor and sports staff. I was the only person, but which was a great learning experience. And then I went to the Post Herald again as assistant sports editor. And then I was the sports editor in Decatur and in Montgomery. Then I went to the Huntsville Times as what was called sports managing editor, which was basically a management job, not as much writing. And I really didn't, I liked it, but I missed the writing part of it. And in 1994, I made my feelings known that I would like to, if possible, to do something. And we had some staff changes, and that's what, and I had the opportunity to cover Auburn. Really have been doing that ever since. 2 years in there, I was what we called college sports editor, which meant I covered both of them. But for most of up until 1994, and then I guess 2 years after that, I covered Auburn and Alabama both pretty much equally. Since then, though, I've been covering Auburn. And then in 2008, I became the, what was that called? Senior editor, I guess, at the at Auburn Undercover. And it was then an ESPN property, but then it became 24/7 Sports. And I've been doing that since 2008 now. And I'm an old dude and in the late stages of my career, shall we say. But I've been blessed beyond belief. I had no real training other than growing up around the business. You know, the one thing that I felt like all along was that, because I felt a lot of pressure when I started, because my daddy was such a well-known figure in this state, you know, and I just felt like I was being compared to him. And I still don't think I compare very well to him. It really came close to making me decide to go on and try to do something else. But I got through that. And the one thing that I think I learned was that the one thing I couldn't control, talent. I was as talented as I was, however much, but I could control how hard I worked at it. And I think I've worked at it pretty hard for most of my life. And like I said, I've been blessed. I've had I've gotten to do things and see things that I never would have imagined, far, far more than I ever thought when I walked in there for that first job at the Huntsville News.
Philip, your career has spanned multi-generations of sports writers. I mean, those gentlemen that you worked with, and now, as you would say, you're kind of the elder statesman of a young group of reporters out there. I mean, you've seen so many come and go, I would think, in your career.
When I got into the business, Al Van Hoos had replaced my daddy as sports editor of the Birmingham News. And I had known him for my whole life.
Right.
Because he and my daddy had worked together, and he was a fine man. And then Bill Lumpkin, who hired me, he and my daddy were competitors for sure, but friends. And then there, Mr. Bob Phillips, he was still working in the office at the Post Herald, but he was getting ready to retire. But he's the one who gave my daddy his first job. That was special. And I'll never forget this, Andy. I went and covered a Birmingham Southern basketball game. And he was editing the story. And I got back and he asked me a question about it. And he said, look at your play-by-play and check on whatever it was. I don't remember. And I said, well, I didn't keep play by play. He just got it up. I just got it out of the scorebook. And I can still see it to this day. He had on a pair of reading glasses, and he kind of looked over those glasses and looked at me, and he said, when you get to be a pro, you'll do play by play. And I never forgot that. And I never did it again either. Yeah. But that was special. And, you know, getting to know people that knew my daddy well, more on a different level than child to adult. That was fun. And I've gotten to know so many people and talked to so many people. I mean, and seen so many things that I never would have imagined. And I've managed to feed my family and and we've had a pretty good life, and I got no complaints.
Yeah. Philip, I want to ask just one more question about your father. What was his influence? I mean, not just father, son, but what was his influence on you as a writer?
You know, that's an interesting question, Andy, because while he was alive, I never read his stuff and from that perspective. I never said, okay, I want to do it like he does, because I had no intention of doing it.
Yeah.
If you understand what I mean.
Sure.
So, but certainly he has had an impact on me since, in that tell a story, tell the human side of the story. That was what he did probably the best. You know, the one thing he told me when I was a copy boy and taking little short stories on the phone and covered a few high school football games, as I said, his thing he said, always said to me that stuck with me was get it right. And that sounds simple, but he said, if you don't get it right, then nothing else you do matters.
It's interesting you talk about the human side of his writing, because one thing that has always stood out to me about your writing, Philip, is beyond the facts of the story, whether it's a lighthearted story or hard facts or something very, very serious. One thing that has always stood out to me was compassion that you have in the story. And I don't know if that came from your father or if that's just Philip Marshall, but to me, that's always stood out about your writing, in addition just to the talent that you have.
The one thing I have said before, and I said in my dedication to my book I wrote now 15, 16 years ago, he taught me how to care. And that had nothing to do with sports, really. He taught me how to care about people. He taught me to not look down on anybody, no matter what their circumstances. That's what he taught me from the time I was little. So yeah, it certainly came from him probably more than anybody else. It's just part of who I am. I've made a jillion mistakes in my life, and I've, like everybody else, you know, I've done things to hurt people when I didn't mean to. And sometimes in this business, you have to, in reporting the news, you have to write things that hurt people. And it bothers me every time, and I don't like doing it. Yes, that came from him. I would say that's the short answer to that question was, yeah, that's the way I was raised.
All right. You beat me to my next question, my follow-up to that, because I've witnessed, and I've been doing this for a while now, and you and I've covered a lot of the same people in our careers at Auburn, and you cover a Joe Champy or a Hal Baird or a Pat Dye or a David Housel, those folks, for a long period of time. For me, it was impossible not to develop a relationship, a friendship with these men and women. And yet there are times, as you mentioned, where you have to write a story that is not going to be kind to that person or the job that they do. So how do you balance that, Philip?
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard because those relationships is my favorite part of this business. That's been the most fun part of this business for me. And I've acknowledged this before. People would probably say I'm not cynical enough to do what I do. And a lot of people take great pride in their cynicism, and that's fine. A lot of people were saying you can't be friends with people you cover. That has not been true for me. You have to have it's a different kind of friendship, so to speak, because I have a whole lot of friends that are people I have covered and people I have worked with and coaches. And I mean, there are coaches I've covered at Auburn that aren't here anymore that I talk to really frequently now, not in search of information for a story, but just to talk to a friend. I mean, I'm proud of the relationship and the friendship I have with Sonny Smith. I like to think that I separate those things from my job. I think people understand that you have to do that. No one has ever said to me, we've been friends a long time, please don't write that. Nobody has ever said that to me. And because I think people who know me understand where I'm coming from and that I do have a job to do, but I also care about people. And you know, and that's, I don't have any, and people are sometimes surprised to hear this. I mean, obviously I've been covering Auburn for so long that I'm connected with Auburn, and that's fine. And I don't know how you get to know people wherever they are and not feel good for them when they do well and not feel badly for them when they don't. And that's nothing unique to Auburn. I mean, I don't know many people in Alabama now, but over the years there were a lot of people I had great relationships with at Alabama. And I felt the same way about them. I felt good for them when they did well, and I felt badly for them when they didn't. At the same time, you know, I would like to think they felt good for me when I wrote a great story and sad for me when I wrote a bad one. But that's been the most fun part of the business to me, the human part of it, the relationship part of it. And that's not just coaches, that's players I've covered that I still talk to this day. It's been great fun, and I wouldn't swap it for anything.
What is your favorite thing to do? Is it still to write a game story or a preview story, or is it an opportunity that you get maybe to inject an opinion?
Opinion is most of what I do now. I write my column is that I write 5 or 6 days a week. That's the main thing I do, which it's, you know, more sometimes than others, but it is opinion. I like to do in-depth stories on people. Like, you know, over the summer, I got to know KJ Britt's family, and I say get to know them. I talk to them on the phone a lot. Big Cat Bryant and Flash and Sean Shivers. You know, I like to do that, to talk to learn who these kids really are, not just 40 times and stars and all that stuff. And columns and that are the things I like to do the best. I like to chase the news when there's news breaking. I mean, I have no desire to cover another coaching search. That's when the competitive part of the business comes out, more or less. You're trying to get it before everybody else does, and you're trying to have better sources than they do and stay after it a little harder than they do and see if you can get it first. And I enjoy that too. Those are the main things. I hadn't written a game story in a while in football. I do cover softball because I like it. And so I write softball game stories during the season. But writing columns, writing those in-depth human stories, as right. We're talking about, learning about who these kids really are. I mean, I through that, I have made friends with a lot of people. I mean, I'm not going to name any names because I'd leave somebody out, but there's a lot of these stories. A lot of these kids are really fascinating, and their families are fascinating. In these days of limited access, talking to their families has been a real, real special thing for me to do. And I hope that I'll do it some more. I'm not into analyzing how somebody played or whether somebody should be playing ahead of somebody else or what happened on a particular play or how. I'm not enough of an expert to do that. All in all, the human side of the thing, which to me is what it's all about, but that's really what sports is all about, especially college sports. That's the most fun part for me.
Wickles Pickles is proud to be the new sponsor of the Talking Tigers podcast. From Saturday sandwiches to Thanksgiving dinner, that secret 90-year-old recipe has people from all over calling to get some of those sweet and spicy jars. Look for Wickles Pickles at a grocery store near you and bring those tangy and fresh pickles to your home. Made fresh in Dadeville, Alabama. I think back to 51 years of your career, whether it's covering Auburn for most of that time and Alabama as well, you have covered some major stories, both good and not so good, for both of these schools. I mean, think about just what has happened over the last half century at both of these schools in your career, Philip.
I can't imagine a better time to have done it, really. I spent, before Auburn played Stanford in the Wooden Classic, I spent 30 minutes, just John Wooden and I, sitting there at a table talking. And it was one of the most fascinating times ever. I got to know Stan Musial, who was one of my childhood heroes, because he came to Montgomery for the what used to be called the George Lindsay Charity Golf Tournament. I've gotten to see so many big events. I've seen just about everything. I've seen the Super Bowl. I've seen, obviously, the Final Four. Never been to the World Series. That's the one thing I haven't done that I wish I had. And because when I was sports editor in Montgomery, I was a columnist and writer and editor, but I didn't focus on Alabama or just Auburn. So I did a lot of things. Went to the Kentucky Derby. That was pretty cool. First $2 bet I ever made, I won $80 because I like the horse's name. Then I thought I knew something, and that $80 was gone before I headed back home from Louisville. I've gotten to do a lot of things I dreamed of doing. Covered national championship games for both Auburn and Alabama, and seen so many of the biggest moments in Alabama and Auburn modern history that I've witnessed and gotten to write about, and that's pretty special.
I moved to Auburn in September of 1988. And I remember walking into a grocery store in town one day after I had moved here. And there were newspaper articles in the grocery store, obviously about Auburn football. Probably more than one, but one of them that I remember is a column or an article that you had written because your likeness was on the news. Right. And I'd never seen that before anywhere I'd ever been. And it just struck me, one, who you were as far as writers in this area, but just two, how important college football is to this town. I never realized that till I moved here. Obviously, I'm fully aware of it now, but that was one of the first things I remember is walking up to pay for whatever groceries I was having. And there was a picture, there was a framed Philip Marshall article about Auburn football that was at that grocery store that day.
Well, I'm honored, wherever it was. But to me, it's always a balancing act, Andy, in that I understand how important college football is. And college football's had a lot to do with my life for as long as I can remember. The first Iron Bowl I saw was in 1958. I was walking up to the stadium with my older brother and my mother, and this man wearing Alabama stuff walks up to me and says, "Son, I'll give you $30 for that ticket." Well, you got to remember, this is 1958 now. Right. $30 was a bunch of money. I was fully ready to go to sell my ticket and go sit in the car and wait for them to come out of the game. But my mother grabbed the skin on my side, as she was wanting to do, and we went into the stadium. But I don't know what the right word is, it's the hardest part sometimes for me is that I think that while it matters so much to so many people, I have a hard time with the component of it that makes people angry. I've never really quite understood that. And I think if you are around, if other people had the opportunity to be around any college football program, Auburn's no different than anybody else in this respect, and see how hard it is and what those kids put into it and the time and the work. I mean, being a college football coach is now, hadn't always been, but is now very lucrative at this level. But I mean, it's also 20 hours a day. And to think that those people, any of those people involved, would do anything other than do everything they possibly could to try to win. It just doesn't make sense to me. And I don't know why it is. And it's the social media world we live in. And it's also now that, you know, the coach is getting rich. So no matter how rich he's getting, he can still just do the best he can do. And somebody has asked me numerous times, why do you think this coach called this play? I said, well, I'm convinced it's because he thought it was the best play to call at that point based on what he knew. And it gave them the best chance for success. I said, I'm convinced that is true. The passion's what makes it fun, but the passion, and especially now that people can vent their frustration, their anger, whatever, without even having to identify themselves, right, as makes that a little harder. But all in all, it's great fun, and it's it's amazing how much it means to people, and that's fine. I'm not saying it shouldn't. It's amazing how much it means to people.
One of the things I've always appreciated about the work that you've done, Philip, is that you go beyond just covering the big football game or the big basketball game. You've covered other folks that probably aren't as well known, may never be as well known, and yet you've covered those folks and have seen the value that they've had and the work that they put in many times that goes unnoticed.
Oh, there's no question. It's hard to play college athletics. And I don't care what sports you're playing. And I think sometimes people forget that those athletes, whether it's the baseball players or softball players or soccer players or equestrian riders or whatever, it means just as much to them as it means to those kids that play football. To them, it is just as important.
Yeah.
It's more important. I'm not saying that is comparable necessarily in the physical demands or whatever, though all of them are demanding, but it's very important, all of them, and to be a Division I FBS athlete and be a successful student is a real challenge, but it's been far too great a challenge for me. You really have to be able to be organized and dedicated to what you're doing. I love covering softball and those kinds of sports because there's no pot of gold at the end of it all for those kids. They're out there because they love it. Heck, the Women's College World Series is one of the most enjoyable events I've covered. I've been there twice, and that was fun. But the human side of it still remains the story to me, the biggest part of the story to me, whether that's softball or football or basketball. I mean, what could be more fun than covering Auburn basketball the last few years? Covering that Final Four team. But, you know, you have to cover the heartbreak too. And I don't know that I've seen a more heartbreaking situation than the national semifinals in 2019, when they really should have won, lost through no fault of their own. But that happens. That's part of this whole story too. I don't know that people in general understand just what it means to all these kids. You know, obviously a lot of football and basketball players come from difficult circumstances. Most baseball and softball players don't. They don't come from difficult circumstances. Some do, but most of them don't. But it means just as much to all of them, to the ones who are successful.
Philip, I get asked a lot when I'm speaking to groups now about, you know, what's the most thrilling play or thrilling game that you've been a part of. And the one that comes to my mind quicker than anything else is the 1997 regional in Tallahassee and the David Ross home run. You were there that day. You were covering that Auburn team.
I was.
It will, to me, as long as I do this, it will still go down as one of the most thrilling plays in any sport that I've ever been a part of.
If you were to ask me in any sport, the three most memorable plays, it would probably be, if you take them as one, the two block punts in 1972, beat Alabama. David's home run, and you really have to understand the whole scenario. He wasn't supposed to be playing, but Casey Dunn broke his hand.
Right.
He went to high school. You could see his high school beyond the left field fence.
Yes, you could.
His mother worked at Florida State.
Yes.
And he looked completely overmatched on the first two strikes, too. He looked completely overmatched. And honestly, I was sitting there waiting for him to strike out, and it was going to be over. And then the next thing you know, everything's going crazy. And it was a no-doubter, too.
Yes, it was.
But that certainly was that's right there with him. The Chris Davis's return in 2013, I was on the sideline. On the end, he was running toward, probably around the 15 or 20 yard line. I didn't even see him go back there. When the clock hit zero, I said, wow, an overtime iron bow, that's going to be something I've never seen before. That's what I was thinking standing there. And I thought they were getting ready to go out there to the middle of the field. And I actually took a step out on the field just to look down there. And that's when as he missed the field goal. And that's when I realized, saw Chris Davis back there, and he started to return the ball. I've literally had nightmares that Chris Davis is running the ball up and I'm on the field and can't get off. And I get tangled up with him. He falls down and doesn't score. But then when he broke clear and turned and kind of turned for home, I mean, the ground shook under my feet. That's in the moment, the loudest I've ever heard that stadium. Another one that I remember very well is not one play, is the 1989 game when Alabama played at Jordan-Hare for the first time. I believe that was the loudest I've ever been in a stadium, just as far as constant from start to finish.
Yeah.
But there's so many of them. You know, there's others involving Alabama. I saw the Tom Clements pass out of the end zone for Notre Dame in the Sugar Bowl in 1973 season. I was standing behind the goalpost when Van Tiffin kicked his field goal. If you see a video of it, you'd see a person standing back there behind the goalpost, and that was me. So I actually went and stood back there again when Auburn played Memphis in the Birmingham Bowl. I was probably the only person that enjoyed going back to Legion Field. But because I just walked around, I saw where Bo went over the top. You know, I saw a lot of big things at that stadium. And of course, it was considered a great stadium in my childhood. So many things. You know, one I remember is a lot of big shots in basketball. Auburn winning the SEC championship in 1999. And of course, the 2019 season and the 2018 season, which I honestly think if Anthony McLemore hadn't gotten injured, would have been another team that would have had a chance to make a run in the postseason. You mentioned Joe Champy. What a program he built. I asked him a couple of years ago, I said, how long, because as most people know, they got to the national championship game 3 straight years and didn't win it. And I said, how long does it take to get over something like that? He looked at me and he said, I couldn't tell you. I hadn't done it yet.
here's another thing I remember. And you and I both knew that he was about to step down, retire. And you were in Connecticut covering that team. They beat North Carolina State, and then they were getting ready to play UConn. And that team was undefeated and was about to win another national championship. And I remember you asking Joe Champy about the biggest change in his career from his start, I guess, at Army to now. And in classic Champy fashion, do you remember what his response was?
I don't.
His response was, well, my suits are a lot better now.
Joe was one of the more memorable guys I've known. He was fun to watch coach. They were playing the Russian national team or some Russian team.
I called this game. I remember.
Exhibition game. And the way it worked, they brought one of the officials. That's the word.
It almost became an international incident between Joe and that official.
He's a great coach.
Yeah.
I've always wondered how he would have done if he had tried his hand at the men's side, which, you know, a lot has changed, but the games are different. Obviously, whatever the sport you want to call it, it's a different games, and just incredibly talented and well-trained people playing them.
Yeah.
And but a lot of things don't change.
Yeah.
And again, we get back to the human side of what we cover, and that really doesn't change so much. And that's been the fun side to me.
Here's my last Philip Marshall story. For the last, I guess, 10, 15 years that Jim Fife was calling games, I had the pleasure of serving as the locker room host pre and post game locker room host. And we were at Legion Field. Terry Bowden was the head coach, and Auburn had taken a lead late against Alabama. And I believe Freddie Kitchens was the quarterback for Alabama, and Alabama was driving. And I was down in that north end zone getting ready to go into do the post-game locker room.
Right, 1996.
All right. And this distinguished writer walks up behind me and looks at me and says, Auburn's about to get its heart broken. And that's what you told me, and it happened. You knew what was coming that night. And I looked at you like, oh, come on. Now that's not going to happen. Well, it's exactly what happened. And it happened.
If it makes you feel any better, standing on the sideline at the Rose Bowl, and Trey Mason runs 30 yards for a touchdown to give Auburn the lead with a minute and 20-something seconds left. I'm standing beside our friend, Jason Caldwell. I said, this is one of the dangest teams I've ever seen. And he looked at me and said, it's not over yet. And I said, oh, they're not going to let them score. He said, I don't know.
Yeah.
And sure enough, they went and scored.
And that was the most devastated locker room that I was ever part of, was after that game.
Yeah, it had to be. I mean, that's just a that's one of the hard parts when you get about, and things were more accessible then. Players were more accessible. We had a better chance to get to know them. Yeah. I mean, you still do, but we, as in the people who cover it, for something that big to get away from it, it's a whole lot easier to get beat 35-7 than it is.
Sure. Things like that. Absolutely.
And when you could just say, well, you know, we had a great year, but that team was just better than we were. They were convinced from the get-go that they were better. And then to have a big lead like they did, and then let it get away, and then have a great drive that you think is the game-winning drive, and then that gets snatched away too. It was brutal for sure.
Yeah, Philip, thank you for reminiscing today. I certainly appreciate the stories. I appreciate the work that you've done in your career
over 50
years.
I'm honored that you asked me to do it. I truly am, and I have managed to stay around for a long time and be around hopefully for a little bit longer at least, and then turn it over to all these young guys that are young enough to be my children or my grandchildren. And I said one time, I told somebody, I said, I felt old when I started covering teams that had players of children of players I had covered on it. And now I'm starting to see grandchildren of players that I've covered. And I said, I will not stay around long enough to see anybody's great-grandchildren playing. I'm committed to that.
Philip, thank you for being a part of the podcast today. I certainly appreciate it.
Thank you, Andy. It was great.
For Philip Marshall and the Talking Tigers podcast, presented by Wickles Pickles, I'm Andy Burcham. Be strong and be courageous. Bull Regal.